welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are still shamelessly plugging our show at the Rialto Theatre with Chris Catlin and Andy Rollins on the 12th of December in association with oldfootballshirts.com.
Are we?
Are we? Yeah, okay. We might be. Might, yeah, you know, claustrophobic in here. Well, we left the Amex on Saturday very much with a feeling that we'd just snatched a draw from the jaws of victory. However, it did end our two-game losing streak, and most of us would probably have taken a point before the game. Maybe. Today we head to Huddersfield, who have found some form of late and where we haven't won since Jake Robinson hit a hat-trick in 2006. It was that long ago. That is, of course, followed by a visit from them. On Tuesday night, who are also desperate for points, and their record at the Amex is pretty good. So let's hope we can find our attacking form in time. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back Jared Evans, and, of course, our favourite lover.
Bless you.
Mr Mark Brailsford. How are we all?
We're well.
Well, apart from
the Lurgians.
Yep.
You're all right, Jared.
I'm surviving, yeah.
Last time you were here, Jared, of course, you were facing a question of Raw. Have I got to ask you some questions?
You can do if you want. It's all there.
I think he's pig sick of them, frankly.
Anything Al doesn't do, I'm up for.
This is true, actually. This is very true. Mark, Christmas season's coming up, and it is the season for treason.
Yes, indeed. Well, that was the year that was at the Palace Pier, 27th to the 30th of December, and a New Year's Eve show at 6, if you fancy that.
Have you got a show coming up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wonder what I'm doing here. Am I plugging your show?
Does it come across any Albion games?
Well, luckily, unless TV suddenly at the last minute decided to move it again, this year I've come up more lightly than usual. Normally, I have so many games that suddenly get moved on my shows, and I've been cursing Sky and BT like Attila was. So, but now I'm very happy because I think I can make the games over this festive season.
Okay,
sorry to hear that.
Well, here we are.
Didn't think of it that way.
Well, here we are though. 13 games gone, unlucky for some. 15 points and 12th place. So, how do you feel the season's going, Jared?
I think we're a little bit. We don't score goals and we don't attack enough. I think that people are a little bit disappointed. But if you look at where we are, and I think the average wages came out this week in The Guardian as well, and we're the fifth lowest team. So I think we're doing okay. Obviously, we'd like us to attack a little bit more, not go gung-ho like Fulham and get battered every week. But maybe more than two shots on target when you spend £150 to an away game would be nice.
Yeah, but I mean, we're going to talk about the Leicester game in a minute, Mark, but there's quite a lot of fan frustration at the moment about us maybe not creating that many chances, and people are going to obviously ask the question about us spending all this money and not seeing that amount, that talent on the pitch, and why are we signing strikers when they're not playing?
Well, the money thing's a correct point Joe's made there, but of course now we need to think about really what we're watching sometimes and how frustrating it was, as we all felt when you leave the stadium if you were there, and yet, you know, I don't want to be one of the bedwetters who's complaining about Chris Hughton, because I love him. I think he's a brilliant manager. And I think, to be fair to Chris Hughton as well, if you look down at the touchline during the game, he was actually getting really more frustrated than usual. Yeah. The old Chris has lost it meme sort of starts again. But he was upset.
We're talking about?
Well, we are talking possibly three.
Yeah.
You know, that
we're
was serious.
The entire forklift truck driver.
We were looking at the full wave of the team forward, you know. And actually, to be fair, I think he said afterwards, you know, that the team didn't quite do exactly as he wished. And it was clear to us. There's something not right, and it is not going forward enough, and there's something that needs to change. And I don't know if that's the coaching or players coming back from injury, but I thought Trollope also looked frustrated towards the end. Mm. And finally, when he got a decision from Chris, he kind of quickly turns to the bench and gets something going. It looked to me, I wonder if there is too many pulling back on the reins going on, and maybe they need to think about
that. I think it's a little bit about progression this season as well, and it's sort of a little bit similar to how we was last season, where we started like this, we were quite defensive, and then he did sort of let the reins off after Christmas. I think the Bournemouth game, even though that was 2-2, and the Chelsea game, even though we lost 4-0, we actually attacked a top six team and we looked a bit better. And potentially he's doing the same thing this season. But I just think that you know, it's not time to panic. I still think Hewitt's the right man for the job. I don't think anyone really questions that.
I agree with
just,
that, yeah.
It'd just be nice just to attack a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I don't think that there is any reason to, you know, we're not calling for his head, but no, I mean, no, but, no, he, it, but at the end of the day, he's not beyond criticism.
No.
And one of the criticisms that's labelled more often than not is the fact that he's not a reactive manager. He's the substitutions you can pretty much guarantee will always be on or around the 70th minute.
But that seems to presume then that the substitutes will come on and do what they're told, because clearly, as Mark has just alluded to, the players aren't doing what they're told.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I know we'll talk about Leicester in a minute, but let's face it. I mean, just as a point of example, against Leicester in the first half, we were pretty decent. I know Leicester weren't great. We're talking to fans after the game. They said they weren't great. But we were pretty decent, and then we just regressed. Now, don't get me wrong, Leicester improved. But that doesn't mean to say that we had to just sort of like, you know, roll over and have our tummies tickled. So there is, and you could see, I think it was at one point, Prepper was waving the team forwards. And you think, you know, come on, the rest of them, if they know to come forwards, then why isn't the rest of the team doing it? And I can't help feeling somewhere down the line, I don't know, there isn't a leader on there who's actually telling them, move up the 10 yards you need to. What are they scared of? Yes, there's decent players, and yes, we know Vardy's a bully, but do as you're told. If you do as you're told, then in this instance, you know, I won't say we'd have definitely won, but we'd have had a better performance, which hopefully, too, would have led to the possibility of more goals. Because let's face it, I mean, apart from the last 5 minutes when Leicester seemed to run out of puff, we did nothing for that second half.
OK, well, let's talk about Leicester then. And there were some changes to the side. One of them was probably surprised, two of them weren't, which was Gross and Prepper coming back for the suspended Stevens and Solly March. But the biggest surprise, like I said, was Bernardo coming in for Boll.
And he played really well. I thought it was great.
He did do well. I'm just wondering if the work of Captain Bong 3-4 days earlier against Brazil had taken it out of him, but because he was on the bench, so it's not as though he was
probably like put his back out picking up Neymar all those times.
Well, no, Neymar went off actually very early. It was Richarlison he had to look after, but
I think Hughton did a very similar thing with Skeletto last season, where he gave him the 2-3 months to get used to. You know, I mean, if anyone went to Watford, Bernardo was well out of his depth in that game, and it was a bit of a shock to him.
He was playing out of position.
Yeah, he got shifted across.
Yeah. But, you know, he's given him the couple of months to get used to it. I think the same might be said with maybe Jahan Bakhsh potentially might come in and do a little bit more, although I've not seen as much. I see more potential in Bernardo, being a bit more athletic, hopefully push better on the ball than what Bong is. You know, I think Bong's very good defensively, but his distribution of the ball is poor.
So you can hear the drums.
Yeah.
No, but I think what the thing that happened for me with Bernardo was is that defensively he was very, very good, and they didn't actually have a huge amount of fun down that side. What my criticism down that side would be is that I thought that Izquierdo was actually just sort of playing his own game, and where Bong and Izquierdo seem to have a certain understanding, and this will come, Bernardo and Izquierdo on that particular day didn't seem to the same extent. So they seem to be very disjointed to anything that Bernardo was trying to play out. And the number of times that Izquierdo played Bernardo back into trouble, you know, was well, you were tearing your hair out, AD.
That happened a long time ago. Okay, but I mean, Mark, Glenn Murray, probably not our talisman, I suppose, but I mean, he did pick up a knock very early on.
Well, actually, what you said about the timing of changes really should have gone off a lot earlier, possibly even at half time. They knew he had the knock then, and I thought they gave him a chance.
They strapped him up and sent him out.
But yeah, but you could see him limping around. And, you know, Leicester, we talked about how Leicester weren't very good according to their fans. We should have been out of sight before half-time, and that is the mistake we're making. We're not pushing on when we should be. Get a goal, we sit back, and we don't push on. And it's frustrating, and it's getting more frustrating as we watch it.
Well, the frustrating thing, Jared, for me was the fact, I mean, Glenn is great, but we all know when he starts running, him and Pascal Gross together, you expect the Baywatch music to start running. it's all in slow motion. So basically, you're playing against 10 men and you want pace up front. I mean, particularly against someone like Wes Morgan, who's, again, he bullied
Murray quite a lot, actually. You know, Murray was getting battered a lot.
Well, the ref gave him nothing as well.
Well, there is that. So
I think that Murray not being taken off reminded me of Gross against Fulham when he was clearly injured after 25-30 minutes, and the backup we've got in them two positions isn't good enough.
And, are you talking Fulham this year or last year?
Fulham this year.
Okay.
So, in September when we drew 2-2. Gross was clearly injured after 20-25 minutes, and it still took to the 70th minute to take him off, and maybe that made Gross injured for longer.
It was 3 months.
Thought he slowed down and didn't notice. Yeah.
but he was clear. Anyone watching, you could tell he was clearly not right, but there wasn't the trust in Bissouma or the trust in Adone on Saturday or Lacardia to replace Murray or replace Gross at that time. And it's them key players. Mm. You know, I actually think we've done quite well without Stevens. How many games have Stevens and Proper played together this season?
I think there is, excuse me, though, I think there is a certain bit of, I can't think of another word, it's the word that popped into my head, but I think there is a certain bit of magic with those two. So you take either one of those out of the equation, then I think exponentially the quality of the midfield does go down. Proper and Stevens are clear; they're clearly both holding midfielders, but then we do have creative talent up front, and I can't help feeling that some of the creative talent is actually not being fed properly by the midfield. Yes, we know that Kyle can push forward, but that in itself isn't necessarily the right thing. It's not the long ball or the short ball, it's the right ball, as Bill Shankly once said, and I'm not sure that we actually always get that. And certainly in Proper we get that. Stevens, yes, he can be a little bit more careless with the ball, but you know, the pair of them together operate brilliantly.
Okay, well, let's not forget that in that first half we were pretty good, particularly against 11 men, Mark.
Well, yeah, and Leicester were giving the ball away left, right and centre, so we should have capitalised. But I'll disagree with Alf to a degree there as well about whether the midfield is also at fault here. A lot of it is, and you can't drop Murray when he's fit, he's brilliant. But pace up front is the issue. Now, maybe this is where the experiment where March was closer to Murray didn't quite work, but Andone, now, when you're attacking and you've got the opportunity, you need pace alongside or close to Murray, and that will really open it up for Murray as well. That would tear new ones in, if you use the...
Read Sam Bulldog.
Precisely.
But do you use, in that case, Andone as a second striker or as the creative fella up front? Can Andone do what Gross does, albeit, you know, he can run faster, but can he pick the pass? You know, can he cross the ball the way that Gross does? I mean, that's the...
Well, you don't need him to, because if you put Gross deeper... lying and sitting next to a sitting midfielder, then you've got Gross sitting there and making use of the fact he doesn't have to be fast then. He's seeing the ball and his movement's fantastic.
So you're talking having Murray and Andone and Gross.
Yeah, but you sit Gross in the midfield.
In place of whom?
Yeah, I think you only need Stevens or Kyle in that holding midfield position.
Wow.
Jared? Would you not play Gross in a holding midfield role like he did against Southampton in the Cup?
Well, I think he did quite well in that game, actually, but we were rubbish in that game. You talk about the Caribou...
Yeah, the League Cup.
Whatever it is.
But then also as well, isn't there the question of a change in formation? Would a 3-5-2 not let Balogun's come in?
That's what I'm getting
and
at.
And has been...
Yeah. You know, well, I think we're a bit thin on the ground for a 3-5-2. Yes, we can do it, but we have no backup.
Well, we've got Dan Byrne coming back in.
Keeps scoring and goes past Christian Walton, so...
Yeah, what's that?
He keeps scoring own goals past Christian Walton, so... at least he'll be at home when it comes to Brighton.
I'm not even going to say that. Okay, well, we did have a very good chance early on, and it was fantastic play from Berham Kaya, who robbed the ball from Ibora in the midfield. And he played a neat 1-2 with Pascal Gross. He found him again. We've just smuggled a beat, but the Danes saved really well.
I thought it was an excellent save, actually. I think
the only save of the game, I think.
Possibly. Apart from the shot straight at Ryan. It was a good save. You know, always with hindsight, you know, it was a nice height. Yes, it was. You know, it was a nice height. It was it wasn't a tame shot. It was a decent shot. I think Schmeichel made it look an easy save because I think his position was superb in the first place. So it's not the flying bit that's actually in the way that Ryan did against South Korea. I think it's just his position. It made it actually look a really good save.
I think it should have gone low to the near post though.
Well, that's what I say. With hindsight, that's so easy to say.
Oh, hindsight. Well, loads of hindsight here today. Loads of that. Okay, so Gross and Proper were back, and we've mentioned that. I mean, it didn't really look like they were away, actually. There's some very nice play in the first half.
We were talking about it last week, about whether they're going to come back. And we're all saying, do you bring both back? Isn't it a high risk? Blah, blah, blah. Like I say, I don't think there was a problem with either of them. I mean, I the only thing that worried me was whether they were going to last 90 minutes each, not as to whether they were going to be good enough or keep up with the pace. Mm. And I think they were okay.
Okay, well, we did take the lead, and it was a Gross forced the corner, Knockhart takes it, and it was just, well, where was the defence, really? I mean, there's three players around Glenn, and he still managed to put it in the back of the net.
That's Glenn's experience. That's a good run across and a good jump. Like he's come on the blind side, maybe someone could have blocked him, but that's just his experience of being right players, reading the ball and
Oh, Leicester got sucked into the play.
The timing of his head and the jump to beat three men when he's probably full favourite to that is just, that sums up Murray, doesn't it, really, I think.
Okay. Well, we need to talk about James Maddison, who I thought was actually absolutely brilliant until he wasn't. Basically,
well, it was a silly free kick. Well, it was kind of one of those take one for the team, and that leads to another thing I want to talk about here, because it's that kind of taking one for the team yellow card, the first one. Let's talk about that. Never mind the simulation. Should there be a difference? Should it be looked at that there's a different kind of punishment for those? What is effectively blatant cheating of, you know, who was it? It was Knockout was going through?
No, it was Knockout,
It was Knockout, and he just sort of hacked him over. You have to bear in mind that actually it's the same punishment as taking your shirt off when scoring. Now, admittedly, taking your shirt off when scoring has been around for yonks, and you know not to do it, but it's the same punishment, and it's not. It doesn't seem right that the same punishment for that is the same punishment for, you know, effectively a professional foul. Discuss.
Mark?
Shoot them.
I'll be a little bit more diplomatic. I'd say maybe a sin bin. Maybe that's where, because I was at Cardiff when Adone went through, and I think it might have been Cunningham, just absolutely clattered him.
Yeah.
And there was no attempt for the ball. He just took him out. I'm not saying he would have gone on and scored, but that sort of professional foul, 5 minutes off, if it's professional and if it's deliberate.
But there is always a call for rule changes, and we're going to be talking about VAR in a minute. But there was the second, the simulation there.
He admitted it.
Yeah.
Is there any difference between the Iheanacho one where he's jumped? And the only difference is between the Maddison one and the Iheanacho one is that Duffy didn't dive in and Kyle did. They're anticipating it. And they've jumped, because if you look at the Iheanacho penalty, he's doing the exact same thing as what Madison's doing.
I'm not so sure. I think that the referee might have had his considerations along the lines that I think about 5-10 minutes earlier, someone had already gone down a bit dramatically early in the box, so it was clear that someone. I can't say it was necessarily Madison, but it was clear that someone was looking for that kind of thing. There is a culture, evidently, that they're doing that.
Mm.
You know, all this, I'm young, I'll learn. Sorry, oh, yeah, all right, you're 21. That should have been battered out of your psyche when you were 14, mate. Sorry, I cannot accept the whole I'm young, I'll learn sort of thing.
Well, if I could add just then about the referee, though, it's often we get to criticise the referees, and they're often, you know, really to blame for a lot of the awful decision-making they make. I have to say, I thought that was good refereeing for a change. Finally, the rules are there. There are laws of the game that are available, but they're not always applied, are they? And the referees only have to just utilise the laws that are available to them properly, and we will be able to stamp that kind of thing out. And retrospective punishment with video as well. They're not using that as often as they should in my book as well.
Well, they did try that in Scotland, and then it got voted out again. I think that, you know, it was Gordon Smith who actually tried to bring that in, and he did bring it in, and it was a good thing. But, you know, then UEFA or FIFA said, not happening. So, yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about a rule that will be coming in next season. Because this, and the very prudent point is this. Proper played the ball into the run of Gross, and the flag goes up. Gross plays on the slots home, and Schmeichel just went around kicking people, basically. Now, here's the thing. Gross was actually onside. Highlights proved that he was onside. Now, next season, if they're using the same rules as they used in the World Cup, if it's a tight call, the flag won't go up, and VAR will sort it out afterwards.
Well, you were in Russia, Mark. I mean, tell us what your in-stadium sort of considerations for it were.
Well, the thing about VAR that was obviously controversial when you're watching on television is that you've got the advantage there. You can see it happening. In the stadium, the issue there was, do the crowd know what's going on? And I thought the Russians got it right, actually. I thought that whatever Kalina had done, who was the head of the referees at the World Cup, really great referee in his own right anyway, and it's one of the few top international referees who gets it. The introduction of VAR was more successful over there than it has been in the cup games over here. Because over here, it was chaos. There, the stadium screens are actually showing you what's not exactly the action that the referee's looking at, but there is an explanation. VAR is examining it. You know it's a VAR moment, not just the referee standing there. You get information.
So it's like in cricket when you see the spinning cricket bat.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more fun as well. Actually, I think the tension in the ground is much more interesting as well.
Now, for the fact that the Premier League are going to be bringing it in, which is, you know, is a matter still of ongoing contention, and I think we'll never be satisfied until you know it's actually going to be foolproof, and it's not going to be foolproof because you're still only forever talking about the opinion of the referee. Is there is a practical problem with that, in as much as there are at least two stadiums in the Premier League that don't have big screens, and they're two of the bigger stadiums. I think Anfield, correct me if I'm wrong, and certainly Old Trafford.
I think Anfield does have one.
It does have one now, but certainly Old Trafford doesn't have one. So if Mark's point is that they're explaining what's happening rather than the actual, you know, here's the incident, because otherwise what I fear is trial by stadium, and I don't think that's really going to be helpful to anyone.
They won't do that, I think. But if it helps, you know, not have the behaviour of Schmeichel, which is frankly outrageous, the way he behaved in that game, I think that was cheating, basically, what he was doing later on as well.
Well, basically, he was trying to get Grace booked for kicking the ball away, when, quite frankly...
Technically, he should have been.
Well...
Because the whistle had gone and Grace played on. Irrespective of whether he thought he was offside or not. I mean, let's face it, at the time, and be honest, Adi, did you honestly think that Grace was onside?
Yes.
Who was keeping him? You knew the fellow opposite.
Yeah, the man in the middle. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think you probably realised that the rest of the stadium didn't, because as when we got to see the highlights afterwards, you could see that, you know, the entire crowd. Yeah, that's what we do in the West Upper, and everyone goes oh, as if they didn't know that actually Grace was actually being kept onside by someone else.
I know, it was a tremendous groan. It was brilliant.
But the issue is that there's no way you could actually say Grace had a goal disallowed, because, let's face it, the flag had gone up, the whistle had gone, and Schmeichel had stopped playing. I think he effectively threw himself to the floor.
Okay, Jared, did you notice?
I didn't really notice, but it was clear that the flag had gone up, the whistle had gone. And to be honest, say Grace had a goal disallowed, just it's not true, is it? Everyone gave up, everyone stopped.
Yes.
I could have scored that with everyone stopping.
Yeah, but you're good.
Well, rumours.
I think what he means is you could have scored it, AD.
Well, I'm good. Allegedly. But, okay. Well, what have I got here? Oh, Madison goes for Fools of Har. Yeah, we talked about that. Okay, so at least and he had the good grace to admit it. Now,
bet you won't have this conversation after Sahar's played us next week.
So the second half was not so good. Now, there was a couple of opportunities to score for us when we did actually create something, and they all fell to defenders. So there was Duffy's flying volley. There was a Duffy header which he took on because he didn't get a call from Lewis Dunk, who was better placed. There was a Kyle's effort which went narrowly wide, where perhaps a pass would have been better. It's just decision-making, isn't it?
Can you actually honestly say that Murray aside, who, let's face it, has continued his on-fire form from last season, can you say that the rest of the forward-slash-creative aspect of that team, can you say any of them are actually as good or better than last season?
Well, injuries are playing their part, aren't they? Obviously one of them. Gross, clearly the biggest miss. And when he came back, even, you know, just coming back, he looked brilliant, and we looked subtly a better team. You've got to say the injuries are playing a part in a lot of that. But also the evolving of the team, the way you look at who's... Andoni, for example, is a new player. And I think Gerard's right. When you talk about Bernardo coming in, the time it takes... Houghton does bring them in gently, and I think they're slowly getting to grips with the pace of the game as well in the Premier League. And I think there's still that evolution going on, to be fair. So I think it's that what worries me is this next run of games against the really big, big teams. But if that isn't the chance to really go for it, what is?
It's all about progression, isn't it? I think we've probably got the same amount of goals from wingers as what we got last season. Knockhart's got one, hasn't he? Probably had one this time. Knockhart's got more assists this season than he got in the whole of last season already.
That's a good point, yeah. Okay.
He only got two last season.
Top stat in Jared.
Thank you.
I should have actually done that as the quiz thing in question raw, shouldn't I?
Should have, potentially.
Sorry.
As Cuerdo had the World Cup, he had the injuries, Gross has been injured. I think my biggest concern is Murray isn't going to play every game this season. He's going to get suspended for a bit at some point anyway, but if he picks up a knock that rolls him out, especially over Christmas for 2-3 weeks, he'll miss 5-6 games, and that is, you know, without Murray, we do struggle.
Well, I suspect he's not actually going to be playing today.
Because?
He picked up a knock, and, you know...
Yeah, but we don't know how well he's mended.
Yeah, but if he's... Any slight niggles that he's got, keep him fresh for Tuesday.
Maybe. But I suppose you then have to look at the qualities of the Huddersfield defence to work out whether you need strength and guile or pace and cunning.
From watching Huddersfield last couple of years, I think Wagner's got Houghton's number in the sense that he plays a very high back line. They play five across the middle and we don't really touch the ball and we don't really get out the half. I think a bit of pace.
Oh, typical away game
is
then.
You're
totally right there. And that's the thing to do, isn't it? Confound Wagner's perceptions. Mm. Do something very different.
Surprise him, go 3-5-2. play Adonai and Lacardia, why not? Lacardia needs 90 minutes at some point and that isn't against Man City.
Against Man City, he was actually making some very, very intelligent runs. And this comes back to what we were saying earlier about that finding that right ball, which is very easy for us to say sitting in the stands. But, you know, he was making those runs.
It's a pattern of play that you have to work on in training, don't you? And if they're playing, honing what they're doing as a normal pattern, then when you change it, with a player like Lacardia, bless him, who's not used to the system we play yet, and clearly doesn't have the same wavelength as our midfield, that's what they haven't worked on. And it shows, and perhaps now Chris Eden's losing confidence in him. But Andone, for me, he's got to play. He's got the pace.
But the thing about whoever Andone is with, he has to have a big fella next to him. Because unless you're going to play the ball over the top all the time, in which case it's going to be fairly easy for Wagner to actually then just sort of change his formation. Because because Andone is probably going to get bullied. Yeah. So if he can actually sort of outdo it by pace, and if Gerrard's right, and the Huddersfield play that high line, then that's where you've got Knockhart, March, and Donny.
But you want pace against that, though, don't you?
That's what I'm saying. If you're going to have them, they're going to send them dizzy.
So it's going to be a front line, but
it's not going to take much to actually work back against it. Even if after 20 minutes they realise, right, we've got to drop back 10 yards here because we're being done here.
So it's going to be a front line of Connolly and Andone. Brilliant.
That's another short stuff fella, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
The thing is, that goes back to the in-play game. Like, we could shock Huddersfield first 10 minutes. They're not going to expect us to change anything. They expect us to go and play exactly how we play.
And change after 70 minutes, exactly. So
and just
be more
change.
Active, yeah.
Yeah, and just look at, I don't even think Knockhart's got the... I don't even think he's naturally very quick, Knockhart. He's more skillful. March is more skillful. And you get his square down, and you just get a bit of pace. You get yourself up. So many games we see where there's no out ball. It's sort of, that's what Loire was so good at. It was coming on the last 20 minutes of games. He gets you 30 yards up the pitch and draws a foul because he's so quick.
Well, Izquierdo's game against Leicester. I mean, the approach play, some of it was actually really, really good. And then it was the final product. The shot. I mean, he has done one of those textbook shots that he skewed so badly, it actually went out beyond the linesman. Have you got that in your notes? Because that was horrific.
There you go.
Yeah, no, but that's, my point is that his approach play was really good, but he was playing that left wing on his own, and he wasn't really bringing other players in. You have to remember it's a team game. And I actually felt that, personally, and obviously Hughton's a much better fella, I actually personally felt he actually took the wrong fella off, albeit Knockhart looked knackered. But in putting March on, I actually felt that putting him on for Izquierdo would have been.
And but Solly's had this. He can be better as a substitute.
Absolutely. So bring him on as a substitute by all means. And the other thing I would say is that I also get the feeling that Solly March is slowly but surely becoming a kind of figure of hate, this kind of Marmite figure, and I'm not sure where it comes from. He can have brilliant games. He can have maddening games. But do you know what? So can everyone else. And I'm not sure where the whole thing of.
Because he doesn't look like he's trying. That's the problem. And I think he is. Yeah. It's just his language style. But it does look like he's not committed.
It's like Murray from 10 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. Murray was better. He was just caught offside too often.
I think it's his final ball. I think his decision making is wrong every time. He sort of does.
March.
Yeah, he does the opposite to what he should do, I think, 9 times out of 10.
Okay. Well, we did draw the game. Vardy took the penalty, and we've got to say, finished it with aplomb. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with the fantastic oldfootballshirts.com, and I have got an absolute doozy for you this week. I'm just going to pass that over to Jared to describe.
It's got an eagle on it.
Don't let that put you off.
Is it purple or is it blue? I can't tell with this.
That's blue.
Is it blue? Yes. Yeah.
It's actually Albion blue.
Error. Spell it, really. I'm not very good with shirts and descriptions.
I would suggest that the fact that it's a slash from a diagonal part of the front of the shirt with a legal that's quite prominent, it looks American to me. I'm going with LA Galaxy or, maybe Washington DC or something like that.
I'm going to actually take completely the opposite view here because I can see on the badge and on the sponsor Cyrillic writing. So, which, from my knowledge of Cyrillic writing, I think the sponsor says something like Sipmost. And the badge is been pixelated out, so I haven't got a clue. Thanks, Phil. But I would say it's an Araya shirt, so I can understand why Phil...
It's lovely, though. It's absolutely lovely, this one.
whoever it is, I'm going to guess East European and specifically Russian.
You are correct. This is the 2011-12 away shirt of Russian national league side Sibir Novosibirsk.
Bless you.
Formed in 1936, they play at the 12,500 capacity Spartak Stadium in Novosibirsk. They are nicknamed Holy, which is translates to be the Eagles. See the link there. In their 82-year history, they've had many names, including Kirilla Sovetev, which is Soviet Wings.
Bless you.
Sibelmash, which is the Siberian Agricultural Machinery. they've got the Setem, which is the initials STEM, which is the Siberian Electrical Heavy Engineering. Dushanets, after Felix Dzhakhnishki. And Shekhovat after Valery Shekhov.
This cold's really bad today, isn't it?
It is. It's a shocker.
In 2000, Chekhovets merged with Olympic Novosibirsk, and the team became Chekhovets 1936.
Chicken dippers, are you saying?
Chekhovets 1936 were promoted to the second league after the 2000 season, and in 2004 they won promotion to the first division, and they changed their name to Sibir in 2006 and were promoted to the Russian Premier League after finishing the first league in 2009. On 16th of May 2010, Sibir lost the Russian Cup against Zenit 1-0. But Zenit qualified for the Champions League, so Sibir gained the right to go into the Europa League and for the first time in the history. And continuing to make history, they beat PSV in a Europa League match 1-0. There's no Albion links to them at all, but apparently Sergei Gotsmanov once bought a second-hand larder from their manager, Igor Kroninov. There
no,
we go.
He didn't.
Yes, he did.
No.
Interesting. I wasn't far off with the shirt, because Russia do run the United States president, so I'm not far off.
Yes, especially with the eagle sort of motif that's there you go. Got in the, on the carpet in the Oval Room.
Okay, I'll follow your politics out at this.
Yeah, and by the way, Gotsmanov, I think, is Belarusian, not Russian, so...
Well, there you go. But speaking of eagles, I caught up with Jay Crane from the Eagles Beat podcast and website, sorry, and here's what he had to say. Is anything happening Tuesday night?
I don't know. You tell me. I think there's a game going on the South Coast somewhere.
Yeah, apparently. Well, thanks for coming in, Jay. Now,
pleasure.
Basically, were you surprised after the fun and games that we had last season that this game's on a Tuesday night again?
Yep. Completely perplexed by it. I have no idea what the reasoning behind it is. I thought I'd learnt the lessons from last year, but clearly not. But hopefully it will go off without any problems this time around. But yeah, we all know what happened, and it's amazing they've decided to put it on a Tuesday night again, which just seems crazy.
It really is. Because, I mean, it left a bitter taste in the mouth for both sets of supporters, and particularly from your side of it, where you had fans that weren't even allowed to get into the stadium, and obviously the well-documented other stuff that went on. So, I mean, what's happened to the HF this season? I mean, there's all sorts of talk and speculation. Have they actually been going to games or not?
Yes, they're in different parts of the ground, but not as a unit, which is obviously, you know, they've made their name as a group together, and obviously make the noise as a group together when they're in different parts of the ground. It's a little bit different, but yeah, there's been a lot of rumour and suggestion about what's happened, and on the face of it, it's pretty straightforward. The Fanatics wanted to move more centrally to create more of a more sound than, you know, behind the goal. They wanted to be more central, and they started doing that for cup games, when obviously, you know, season ticket holders don't have their seats for cup games, and they were testing that the last couple of years, and it kind of worked. The whole view behind it was bringing in safe standing, which the government vetoed last season, and that kind of spiralled out of control, and the Fanatics wanted a commitment to go behind the goal, and the club wouldn't stick with that, and then the people already in that block didn't want to move, so it's kind of hindered our season, this start of the season particularly. Neither side have come out of it with any looking particularly good. There's a lot of, you know, he said this, they said that sort of thing going on, and it's not really helped matters. And it's affected the atmosphere at Selhurst, which has always been pretty decent.
Yeah,
for the last
I was
going to
say, has that
years.
Has that suffered at all as a result of all
it
this?
It has. Yeah, it really has. Because when you've got a group of guys there who, they do things which a lot of the fans don't particularly like, but, you know, there's no denying that they get on and get the crowd whipped up to, into a frenzy, and the players have just, you know, become to know that they're there, and it kind of whips up the whole of Selhurst Park. And away games as well, it's, you know, particularly loud because you're all in one sort of area, aren't you? And this is the whole thing about next season, bringing in this, the whole of the bottom tier is going to be a singing section. And the wording around having to apply to do it is a bit weird. But the whole idea is that Fanatics want to be more central. They will be more central in the bottom tier, and it's going to be open to any other fans to go and join that area if they want to be, you know, be particularly noisy, which I think Premier League misses. I think the Premier League is pretty dour when it comes to atmospheres around. You know, you watch games on TV.
Yeah, it really can be, yeah.
Yeah, it really, and you know, you watch games around the world, you know, Bundesliga and even Spain, even the MLS is louder than some Premier League games you watch, and that's saying something.
Yeah, but so, the MLS, they let them take chainsaws in, is it?
Yeah, this is true. They'll learn.
It's all a bit crazy, but okay. So I mean, let's talk a little bit about this season then. I mean, would it be fair to say that you haven't really got going yet?
That's very fair to say, yeah. We started off with a good win away from home against the newly promoted side. Away from home at Fulham, which was a good start. I thought, oh, here we go. We're not used to this after last season. Well documented what happened to us the first seven games of last season. We started off pretty well. And then it kind of fell away after that. Struggled with goals, and we still are struggling for goals at the moment, which is just a bit crazy. And I think an amazing stat is if we lose tomorrow against Burnley, we'll be at the same point of the season with the same points as last season.
Yeah, so I mean, as it stands at the moment, you've only scored eight goals all season, and you've got 9 points, so which is the same as Burnley, actually. So you're playing tomorrow. So the joy of Benteke, discuss.
To be fair, I think, you know, when he's been injured, we've missed him. I think the way that we play, the way the team is set up, really is suited to him. And while he didn't get the goals last season, he still is the lone striker to drag those centre backs or, you know, around. He still gives the defence a torrid time, but he just wasn't getting the goals. And I think this season we've missed him. We've seen that we've missed him because we've not had anybody to be able to do that. Even Hodgson has chosen to play Zaha and Townsend up front when we've got Ayew and Sorloth on the bench. I mean, that's just a kick in the teeth to those two guys.
Well Andre Ayew was a strange signing, really. I mean, the rumours that every club he's been, that he's been poisoned in the dressing room. And is that something that you're hearing at Selhurst?
Not so much at Palace, although I think a lot of the fans have kind of jumped on that facts from other fans, and you know, Villa fans have said similar to, you know, to Palace fans and obviously Swansea fans as well. So I'm hoping it's not going to be the same, but you know, he hasn't hit the back of the net, which is what we brought him in to do. And the same with Alexander Sorloth. But I'm really, with Jordan Ayew, there's no excuse. He's played at this level before. He's scored goals at this level, and particularly in the Premier League. He's settled in this country, so there's no real excuse for him. He's had the chances, but hasn't put them away. And I think it says everything that Hodgson decides to leave those two on the bench and not play over an actual striker.
You see, what you need is someone like, I don't know, let me think, Glenn Murray.
Oh, don't. Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, I was asked a question a week by a Brighton fan, any of our team, you know, who would you have at the moment? I said, well, it's got to be Glenn Murray because we're struggling to score goals. And he would just fit into that side perfectly as that lone striker. So, yeah, it's a bit of a sore point among Palace fans because you probably see it with Brighton fans, to be honest. When you let a player go and they score goals elsewhere, it's like, oh, we should never let them go. It's the same with Dwight Gale. It's the same with other players. But Glenn Murray is one where he wasn't getting a game time for us. He wanted first team football, which you can't begrudge the guy going off. But I mean, he's still scoring goals in the Premier League, which is coming back to haunt us.
Yeah. Was that a surprise to see Glenn scoring so many at this level?
I personally thought that might be the end of him in the top flight in the Premier League after he left Palace. He didn't really have a great time at Bournemouth. He didn't really hold down a regular first-team place. But, you know, fair play. I mean, he's kind of slotted into the Brighton side. And it, you know, give him a chance. He's always going to score goals. It's just, you know, the age is against him. But, you know, he's just how much would he be worth at the moment if he was like 5 years younger? It'd be crazy.
I know. Well, if he was 5 years younger, he probably would have gone to the World Cup, to be fair. But it was
very true. Yeah, very true.
I mean, there was nothing. There was Harry Kane, and then clear daylight, and then nothing else.
Exactly right.
But so it's all a bit crazy. So okay, so Will Sahar then, is he a talisman or is he a hindrance?
Talisman, for sure. Since he's come back from United, we've seen the best of him. He's really moved on with his game, both on and off the pitch. And, you know, while he's a massive annoyance to a lot of opposition fans, as you well know, but he's...
We love him here.
Yeah. I thought you might.
Well, it's just that permanent look that he's left the gas on that annoys us, but it's...
Do you know what? That's one of my bugbears with Wilf, is that I wish he'd play with a smile on his face a bit more like he used to. But, you know, he just wants to win. You know, he's one of these players that just wants to, you know, do his best every time. He moans at his teammates, and he's just one of those players that wants to, you know, wants to do the best in every game he can. You know, he's been in and out this season, what with injuries, knocks. You know, he hasn't played every game of the season, but when he has played, you know, you could probably argue that we kind of look for him a bit too much. But he does, you know, when he's playing, and if he's even if he's having a poor game, he kind of creates space for other players on the pitch as well, because so many people are focusing on him. So I mean, he's different class. I think he might be the last season at Palace. You know, he signed a 5-year contract. He's, you know, fair play to him for sticking around, but you know, I think you would you could probably see him playing at a higher level than Palace, if not next season, then certainly the season after.
Okay, so Tuesday night then, what's the feeling amongst the Palace contingent ahead of the fixture? I mean, it's not a big sell down here, I've got to say.
We've noticed, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably to do with last season.
It's got a lot to do with last season.
And I think Palace fans are quite similar in that, you know, there's some horror stories of people that drove down there, got the train back to Brighton, and ended up on the train back to London because they weren't allowed to leave the kettle in process, as it were. But I think Palace fans are looking forward to it because it's just that, you know, that rivalry that we've got in the Premier League, and you know, we've not really had that until you guys decided to join us in the Premier League.
Uh-huh.
But you know, every time we have a London derby, you know, that it's built up, and it's like, well, it doesn't really mean that much, these London derbies, to be honest. It's one of those games, isn't it? It's a Tuesday night. It'll probably go by, you know, without much of media attention, other than if something happens like last season, but I'm pretty sure nothing's going to happen this time.
I mean,
I think it's two fine, you know, finely matched sides, to be quite honest, going up against each other. And we're a bit buoyed after last week at United, getting a good point up there. Depends what happens tomorrow and for you guys at the weekend. But I think, you know, you can't deny that, as you know, the players will be looking forward to it.
Well, that's it. Well, thanks for joining us, Jay. Well, I don't really want to say good luck, but...
I was going to say the same thing, but I won't.
Thank you very much. Nice to speak to you.
Pleasure. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, so that was Jay from the Eagles Beak website. They do all sorts of things about Palace. It's, we're not really going to go look at it, are we?
I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend, actually, from 10 minutes ago, what we didn't say is that thanks, Phil, to for the old football shirts. And if you want to go and look at the online gallery of 95,000 shirts, do go on there, oldfootballshirts.com, and you'll find this Russian thing, which I'm convinced Adi was reading upside down. And Mark was having to say bless you in his finest Russian.
But as well as an online gallery, you can also see one live in the flesh. Where, Al? Where?
Oh, we can see two, actually, just so long as he's not wearing it at the same time. Yes, head yourself to the Rialto Theatre on Wednesday, the 12th of December. Me and Shiny will be actually hosting an evening with Andy Rollings and Chris Catlin. They of Brighton Players and Manager of Yesteryear. Rollings joined the Albion in 1974, Catlin 2 years later. They're good old mates. Chris Catlin, or as AD refers to him as Andy Rollings. it's one of those stories that starts when AD was pickled when. We'll be on stage at the Rialto recording an Albion Raw show. If you want to come along, please do. You're more than welcome. It's going to cost you £8, £6 with concessions. Tickets are selling, and we really look forward to seeing you there. There's a very good bar, Bacalls. And, a lovely evening is... nearly promised, but you know, it is what you make of it.
Well, that is a really nice bar there. There's a bloke who named it that. I can't remember.
Hard to say, but
it was you, Mark, wasn't it?
I couldn't possibly comment. Yeah, it was a shared effort, actually, and they're doing well. It's good.
But which show could you comment on?
Well, my own show. Oh, if that's all right to plug it. But yeah, that was the year that was. It's our review of the year. It's the best of edition. And we're at Brighton Palace Pier in Horatio's Bar from the 27th to the 31st. And tickets are flying off the shelves at the moment. So yeah, it'd be best book. It always sells out this run because it's the best of. And it's popular. So I'm about to say it, but it is.
Now, amazingly, Mark, we get quite a lot of people listening to this show in America. So what will they be missing?
Well, President Trump. Well, of course, they know
all
about.
They really don't want to miss him.
But he's so great. And we do him, obviously the big stories of the year are covered and includes everything that's going on over there as well as here. So obviously Brexit, but all the fun stories as well. We're going more light. We need to cheer people up, we think. Actually, yeah. So we're going for just really going to entertain everyone and make them laugh. That's what we're going to do.
So the dates?
27th to the 31st of December, and you can get your tickets online at www.treasonshow.co.uk. The early bird discount is still in play just. There's a few early bird tickets left. I think the 28th is sold out of the early bird, but there are other tickets available.
And how much are they, sorry?
Between 15, 17 and 18.
Okay, well, you just mentioned the horrible B word there. Now, it's not something we're going to really talk about here on The Raw because we don't do politics here, but it is something that is going to be affecting football, apparently, because it's going to affect the number of players that you can have in your squad.
Well, yes and no. Well, the thing is, I was at a Football Supporters Federation meeting a few weeks ago, and the outgoing Richard Scudamore, and that's another story entirely.
We're not going there.
No, we're not. The outgoing Richard Scudamore...
Ka-ching!
Yes. Did actually mention that he felt, in his opinion, as the chief executive of the Premier League, that Brexit would not actually affect the Premier League too much. Now, what happened then is that story got kind of supplanted or superseded about a week, 10 days ago, where the FA, who have long tried to do this, and now we're actually kind of on a collision course with the FA and the Premier League, they want to reduce the quotas of foreign players playing in the Premier League for each club. At the moment, I think you can have up to 13 players, which is homegrown, and I think they want to reduce that to 7. And I think they're using Brexit as that reason. Now, like I say, we're not going to actually debate the merits of Brexit one way or the other, but what it is that the FA wish to have this and the Premier League are going to fight it. Now, then the point is that we debate what would happen to us.
Well, Mark, what would happen to us? Basically, I mean,
this is assuming that the FA get their way.
Well, it's the Premier League and the money's involved, and it's the money that will win. It always does. The Premier League will get their way, and it's wrong, because the FA should actually look after the England team. The Premier League was founded on that basis. They betrayed that. I think I love being in the Premier League with the Albion, but you know what? There are times when I don't very much like them. Yeah. And I think this is one of those examples, you know, not least what was going on with what we said about Scudamore. Ka-ching!
Yeah. But... Jared, I mean, the whole point of having the academy that we've got is to bring through young talent that will be able to play in the first team squad. Now, it does appear that the people that we're signing to go into there are not necessarily British, for want of a better phrase. So, I mean, do we see a pathway for those players if this actually goes through?
Is that not why Bloom bought the Belgium club?
I don't know. Is it? What's your thinking behind that then, Jared?
Well, if that's... Surely there's some sort of link where we can sign our youth players there, and then we sign them back if they're good enough, as and when. Is that not... I thought that was...
But I think that's a case of working out, bearing in mind that Belgium would be in the... For instance, Belgium would be in the European Union and Britain wouldn't be. I think that we're back to... Effectively, what we're saying is that after Brexit, the theory is that EU players, where there's very little sort of... care and consideration, that's not the right word. The hoops you have to jump through are far fewer than a non-EU player. Example being Percy Tau playing in Belgium at the moment. So effectively, all those EU players will actually have effective status of current or non-EU, unless such. You know, this is what's being looked at. I mean, at the moment, we've got the issue of we don't know what's going to happen, but the club must actually... Well, all the Premier League and all the clubs, in fact, probably all of football, must look at all these various scenarios, and I think it's the lack of knowledge as to what is going to happen when it comes to freedom of movement and freedom of services and what have you, that as to what's going to happen after that. We have a 2-year transition period, but every club must be looking
how they're going to actually cope with any new rules that are going to come in.
Yeah. Well, one player that would have been affected by this if he was still playing for us would have been our favourite Egyptian, Adam Elad.
Well, not really, because he is English. But
well, yeah, I know. But he played for Egypt. Can you imagine? He could have gone to the World Cup. He could have been with Mo Salah.
If he was good enough.
He is good enough. I mean, let's put it out there, because actually, Adam, you see this quite a lot with players who maybe make a wrong career choice somewhere along the line, because I personally think if Adam had stuck around, he might have actually still been around.
Almighty if.
Yeah, it is a big if, but I mean, you know, he was one of those players. I mean, okay, he was a player that Gus Poyet made a better player, and... Oscar Garcia clearly didn't fancy him.
I just want to point out, the reason we're talking about him is because he has just played his 500th domestic first team game.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't include the 7 internationals for Egypt in that, so it's 507. But Mark, I mean, obviously you remember seeing him play at with Dean. What's your memories of Adam Elad?
Well, first of all, his great song, which is Adam Elad song, you know, all the Flintstones and all that. And I thought also, I mean, you look at the fact that they also sold Conor Goldson to Glasgow Rangers, and I thought that was a shame. And we seem to have a pattern in the club of getting rid of these really good central defenders, which is a bit of a shame, actually, because he was a popular player. And I did like the fact that, you know, he almost inherited Cullip's sort of attitude towards patting people on the head. And it was quite enjoyable watching him. And I loved him. I think he was a popular fan favourite and a great player for us.
Jared?
I think that he may have, using the Poyet term, have reached his ceiling. I think if he'd hung about in the Championship for 3-4 years, I always think the one that potentially got away was Joel Lynch, out of that sort of group who came through. Well, if Poyet got hold of him, the football we could play and things like that, and he had a good career at Championship level, potentially.
Well, he's still at QPR now, isn't he?
Yeah, Poyet could have bought him on, whereas Elad dropped down the leagues a little bit and found himself a home at Wickham. I think Elad is the sort of player who he suits an environment and suits the way that you play, and I think that's...
We're kind of into the realms of the sort of Sean Dyche at Burnley and Eddie Howe at Bournemouth sort of thing. I know we're talking about managers there, but it works at a given club and it doesn't work anywhere else. And let's face it, he was your original With Dean Boo boy. You know, he always had a mistake within him. And I think it was almost his consideration was changed overnight when Poyet said, he is the best defender, he's the best player at the club. And I think all of us... We all looked at this. In fact, actually, if I remember rightly, Marcus actually, didn't he actually send a dedication out of the With Dean crowd to say that he was your favourite player?
Yeah, it was actually my birthday. I've got a birthday dedication.
What age were you at the time?
I would have been, God, 30-something.
37, 38?
Yeah.
And what did they tell him it was?
They said, happy birthday to AD Packham, who turned 7 today, and his favourite player is Adam Elad.
Yes. Principally because that's the one who closest looked like him, wasn't it?
Yeah. You don't see them in the same room.
No,
you
but
don't.
Yeah, but I mean, he's you know, 500 games. I mean, that's nothing to sniff at for a player like
342 for the Albion.
And yeah, it's great. And you know, he was brilliant. He was wholehearted. I mean, you know, that butcher's shop window advert at Southampton where he just got his leg cut open.
Oh, God, yes. Sorry. Yeah.
But, you know, the guy was, you know, he always...
Mickey Adams saw him after that game, and do you know what he actually said to him? What you're moaning about is just a scratch.
It's just a flesh wound. Yes. But you know, he was one of those players, I mean, that used to, like, you know, wholehearted, gave everything, left everything out there. Yeah, and, you know, he's one of those players you could really get behind. And, you know, he was a local, he still is a local boy, he's from Brighton. But, you know, he's now in the Albion retirement home at Wickham with David Stockdale and CMS as well.
Oh, blimey. But the point is that this is the incredible thing. We had so many great players in the 2010-11 season, and that was probably one of my favourite seasons ever. And it says something about him that he was the one that was voted player of the season. Not Murray, not Bennett, not Bridcut, not Barnes, none of it, or even Kaz. It was Adam Elad. He was the rock that actually sort of, you know, the whole thing was built on.
Okay. Okay, well, he also played in a game which was at Selhurst Park, and Palace are coming to the Amex this Tuesday. Can anyone honestly say they're looking forward to this game?
God,
no. Can we ever?
No.
it's the game. I think the fact this is now second season, you know, in a row, and we play them in the cup as well. I think that you've got that sort of like the lessening of the tension, lessening of the nonsense, and I think that hopefully everyone has learned their lesson from, you know, certain people's behaviour from last year, and that includes,
you know, the Always Ultras. That includes Sussex Police. That includes, you know, absolutely everyone. You know, we have, I mean, and actually, Jared, let's hear from you about this. You're an intrinsic part of, effectively, you know, I suppose it's like a Christmas Day truce between Brighton and Palace, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, without Crystal Palace, the RMF wouldn't be as successful and as big as what it is. And unfortunately, it's the same as everything. You get the idiots, you get the mindless idiots, and that's not just the Palace fans. When we played the RMF game at the Amex Stadium, the Crystal Palace mascot was a bloke with Down syndrome who got attacked by Brighton fans. Oh, so yes. it's both.
This is a few weeks before the game.
It's both sides that have got that small-minded bunch of idiots. And yes, it's tribal. It's warfare.
People come out of. For those sort of games, and that's the problem. I mean, every game at the Amex has sold out this season. The Palace game hasn't, and that tells you all you need to know. People, and after what happened last year, where everyone just, it was just so flat after that game.
I don't know if it helped or not that the game itself was rubbish, but you saw. I mean, we were talking about this actually before we came on air. I mean, Mark. I mean, you know, the flares and the nonsense was.
Well, yeah, I've heard opinions to say, well, it looked great, you know, the flares and all that. The noises was disturbing. I mean, in the current climate with our, you know, domestic security situation, hearing those loud bangs in a stadium is a little alarming. So there was a lot of idiocy going on. But you know, I love the rivalry with Palace, and I think what Gerard says is correct. I mean, actually, I love that we've got a rivalry with Palace, but it's also great for. The majority of fans, I've met Palace fans, well, we've got mates who probably admit to it. And actually, I like the banter when it's reasonable and sane. It's like you said, they are idiots. But I would love to beat them on Tuesday.
Well, of course we will. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it all goes back to the thing that.
We're blaming Derek Chapman here, aren't we?
Well, no, I mean, we're talking about the behavioural things. If you treat people like adults, they behave like adults. If you treat people like animals, they behave like animals.
Yeah, but what did the ultras do that made them behave like idiots? Or is that what they are anyway? I mean, they were treated the same as everyone else, and yet they were, you know, no one stuck a gun to their head to say you must behave like idiots. I mean, it is absolutely farcical. I mean, I think if you're talking about the tension of a game, and let's go back to the St Patrick's Day massacre here. It was a midday kickoff, probably about the right time. It was a miserable day weather-wise. We absolutely battered them, certainly in the second half. We won 3-0. But I remember we said it on the show afterwards, and we said it sort of at the time and what have you. People left the ground there, whatever it was, 2, half past or whatever it was. Palace fans got frog-marched off to Falmer to, you know, and back up to East Croydon. And people went home and just fell asleep because the tension of the game, yes, you've won, and yes, you want to celebrate, but you're absolutely exhausted at the end of it. And I'm just, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, it was fun then, but it's a little bit more. Oh, sorry, it's a bit less fun now.
Well, you know what would change the mood, right? I mean, if Chris Hughton let them off the leash, right, and we put 3 or 4 past them, the atmosphere around us now, we wouldn't be feeling so bad about the Leicester game for a start. Yeah. And it would be, right, it could transform our season if we have a great one.
Okay, well, I've got a fantastic quote here. It says...
From whom?
It's from a bloke called Chris Catlin, who you can see at the Rialto Theatre on the 12th of December.
Subtle, was it?
Not really. He said, he was speaking in 1986, I think it was. He said, my policy is to go at the opposition right from the start, explained Catlin. I don't care whether we're home or away. Our tactics are the same. The important thing is, for all of us, is that the game is made entertaining. We have to put the game before individual club ambition. Football has had so many problems. One of the reasons is that it's not been marketed in the right way. We've got to make people want to come to the ground and see a good game. There's too much talk about sponsors, as far as I'm concerned. The only sponsors I want to see are the fans pouring in through the turnstiles. That's what the professional game is all about.
And that's what you're going to get from Chris on the 12th of December at the Rialto. I know he's a hero in Coventry, and he's a hero in Huddersfield, but he's still one of us, so...
He is. I love him. And on that note, thank you very much to Jared Evans. Thank you to Mark Brailsford. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Jay Crane from The Eagle Speak. I've been Adi Packer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Mano, mano. Mano, mano. Mano, mano. Ah,
Na 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 na